Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Maskani. And on the panel this evening, we have Professor Amin Ra, Brother Mashinda, and Sister Akasha. Our guest for this evening is Dr. Charles Alexander, one of our affiliates from the Level Set Show. And this evening, the topic is Akoban, a call to action. Welcome, Dr. Charles. Glad to see you back on the platform. And let's begin the evening.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. And Rasaki, I could share my screen.
You can.
Let's see.
While you're doing that, let me share what we have going tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're doing a special edition show. We'll have Mr. Bobby from the Counter Racist Code Show, co-host with Neely Fuller Jr., up into his last show. And Brother Muko is coming back from last Wednesday. And we're going to do a reflections on Neely Fuller Jr. So everybody's welcome to come, and that's what we're doing tomorrow, special edition show.
All right. I'm not sure why this isn't allowing me to share what I want to share. So I'll just going to read. Well, what I wanted to do, what I was going to do is just I was going to show some of the Adinkra symbols. And so Akoban or Akoban is an Adinkra symbol. And I was going to show some of the Adinkra symbols, but for whatever reason, that's not opening. But I'll just
There you
read to
go.
you. You can see it?
Well, I
You can
pulled
see the
it up.
page?
I pulled it
Yeah.
up for you. You see it? Dr. Charles?
Yep. Can you go up to the top a little bit? All right, right there. So we really just wanted to see that top paragraph. Adinkra are visual symbols that represent concepts, proverbs, and aphorisms. They originated from the Gayman people of Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. Back then, they featured as prints on cloths and royals wore to import ceremonies. But they have transcended those Ghanaian and Ivorian origins. They now grace logos, clothing, furniture, architecture, and more. And so, like, you can go there, like in the architecture space, you can go to Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire, and you see cinder blocks made in the symbols of the various Adinkra symbols. And so, if you scan down for me, Rashki, this first one is Gianyami. Except God. So a lot of times you'll see that one, use that as tattoos, and you see it in a lot of jewelry and things of that nature. But it is a symbol that many people use to signify the presence of the Creator. Then you see the two Sankofa symbols that follow that. And again, Sankofa is to reach back, go back and get it. And that kind of speaks to our culture and our cultural continuity and our desires to go back and embrace those things of the fineness and of the heights of our African culture. And if you scan down, you can scan all the way down to Akoben. Keep going, keep going, keep going. Right there. And okay, right, yeah, got it. So the war horn, the symbol of a call to action, readiness to be called to action, and readiness and volunteerism. And so I chose that symbol because not that we haven't always been under attack, not that we haven't always been under assault, but we are at a pivotal time. And again, not necessarily unlike anything we've ever seen before, but the amount of disruption and disruption, the amount of disruption and destruction that we've seen in the first month and a half, 2 months of this presidency, that we may not have seen before. And so I wanted us to really have kind of a conversation about why it, what it looks like and why it looks like this, and literally what is it that we can do and what we are to do, in the wake of this. And so, in short, I would imagine that many of you are familiar with Project 2025. And contrary to popular belief, for many, they believe that that comes from the mind of Donald Trump, but it doesn't. This is the thinking and the ideology of white supremacists, including him, not him, but including him. And this has been the body of work that they've been concerned with since forever. White supremacists don't have it in them to work from a position in which folks who don't look like them have any place in society. I think I really believe that many of us are in search of, this good and kind white person. And it's not that I don't believe we don't have any allies. It is that I believe that the overwhelming majority of white folks show up the way as the overwhelming majority of white folks show up in the United States. And I think they show up this way, throughout the world. And I think world history is pretty consistent in this in this presentation. I think that world history would, in the main, suggest that white folks are the aggressor. And so to that end, not only am I informed by my understanding of geopolitics, I'm also one that ascribes to Dr. Diop's two cradle theory. And let's see if I can get that to pop up. That's not working either. So,
I'll pull it up.
I'm gonna put the link that I'm using into the chat, and then if you can use that link, that would help. And so, but in short, as he's helping me with that, Dr. Diop proposed a two cradle theory. Of course, we have a southern cradle, and that is the source of humanity. That is the continent. That is Africa. And so we know that mankind has its origins on the continent. And then after successive migrations, folks went up into Asia, Eurasia, and whatever becomes Europe. And after or during a glacial period, a group of Africans were were trapped behind the clay glacier and spent thousands of years, 20s, 30 thousands of years in this barren and isolate and cold space. And it is out of that that we get the northern cradle. So Africa is the southern cradle and Europe is the northern cradle. And so I'll read this excerpt here. The two cradle theory of civilization discusses the theory of evolution, which states that Europe and Asia caused changes in the human species, which led to the development of an individualistic, xenophobic, aggressive, nomadic culture among the whites, isolated among the whites, and a cooperative, xenophilic, peaceful, sedentary culture among blacks who still inhabit the more benign climatic environmental zones. Thank you, brother. You can. So again, the northern cradle would be Europe, and the southern cradle would be Africa. And out of the northern cradle, you get the xenophobe, you get the aggression, you get so they don't like people who don't look like them. They operate from a scarcity model. They are warlike and aggressive. Which is very individualistic, as opposed to the southern cradle, in which you have cooperative and collective activities. The xenophile, meaning that not only do they embrace each other, they embrace other cultures. And for us, we've seen historically where we may have embraced other cultures, to a fault. But I believe that, that those that theory adequately encapsulates, what it is that we are seeing and what it is that we are experiencing. And so I wanted us again to have a conversation tonight with that as the background, as we are looking, as we are facing this situation. Another way that I look at this is as this resembles the reconstruction. This resembles reconstruction, or the end. I'll say the end of reconstruction. This resembles the end of reconstruction. And by the time we get to the end of, by the time we, as we're progressing through reconstruction, and despite what the white supremacists say, Reconstruction was a successful was a successful political mechanism for the country coming out of the Civil War. What those folks did not have a tolerance for was for black leadership and black agency. And so in the election of 17 of night of excuse me 1877, they broker a deal because the race was close, and in order for the Republican candidate to win, he had essentially signed a deal or agreed to the removal of the troops from southern territories, and which would then allow the Democrats. So again, for some folks who don't know, at that time, kind of the roles of the parties were reversed. The Republican Party was literally considered a party of liberty and freedom and emancipation, at least from the perspectives of the free Africans and the enslaved Africans at the time, and as well as the abolitionists. And so, in order for that Republican person to send to office, he had to agree to that, and he agreed to that. And so we see a flipping of the script in terms of what was going on in the South and the resources that were allocated to suppress overt white supremacy and harm to Black folks. And so as a result of that flip, we see Black folks literally silenced, on into the 20th century, and just heinous acts and whatever gains we had made to that point were being repealed. And we kind of live that life all the way until we get to what some people call the modern civil rights movement. And then the things that we were able to get, the laws that we were able to get passed, from Brown versus the Board of Education to the Civil Rights Act, to the Voter Rights Act, and also housing discrimination acts in the latter part of the 60s, and also affirmative action. So all of those, those things were able to come aboard, or we were able to realize some of those things, almost, 80, 90 years after the fact. So I'm suggesting that that's what we're looking at right now. So we're looking at the rollback, and we're looking at the deconstruction of the administrative state. And why would that be a strategy? Because much of the gains that African Americans in particular have realized because of our efforts and our fights, in the context of pretty much Democratic presidencies and the works that were done under those presidencies in cooperation with the Supreme Court. And so that's why it was important and has been important for the white supremacists to win the Supreme Court, and now they have a decided advantage in the Supreme Court. And now they're doing all they can do at this very moment to ensure that going forward, they don't have any meaningful competition from the Democrats going forward. And so that's why it's important for them to deconstruct the administrative state, to go after things like education, to go after all federal jobs, and to go after Black folks in particular under the guise of the statement of DEI. But again, we have to understand that this part isn't new. The language being used is new, but this has been the nature of the fight for them, dating back to the Civil War, dating back to the 50s and the 60s. I'm sure those of you in California are very, very much aware of, the continual fights about affirmative action in the California university system. This is a continuation of that fight. We don't always look at these things in this manner. Hence, this is why we have to have a call to action. This is why we have to use a phrase for our show, to level set, and to make sure that, as often as we're able to have these conversations, we are able to kind of establish a baseline for folks to help them to understand what it is that we're looking at and how it is that we have to move forward. So before we move forward in this conversation, any questions or comments in terms of what we're, what I'm proposing to open up with?
So you want questions first and then comments, or what?
Either or, just.
We could do them both at the same time.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to start with Akasha. Akasha, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. Mm-hmm. So do you have a question or a comment about the concept you talk about, a call to action? You have a question for him or a comment about what he's talking about?
I don't have a question. I want to speak to when he spoke to the times, and I think he tried to respectfully say it's really not the same. But I just want to say for you, brother, it is, you know, I must say it honestly, it's worse. What you were saying,
What I'm saying,
it is,
it's the same thing.
yeah, it's worse. And I agree with everything that you're talking about. I wrote a movie. It's called The 25-Year Plan. And my dad was in the Vietnam War, and so when they sprayed the Agent Orange, it gave us psoriasis. And then with the Tuskegee, it was opium and syphilis. And then with the genocide, it was AIDS and freebase cocaine. And now it's meth and COVID. So they stay ready. I just kind of like, I like how you said it respectfully, but I want to come through like your sister and say it the way that don't nobody want to say it. Yeah, these white people, they don't sleep. They plans have been planned out for 100 years. And it's kind of like Malcolm said, if we don't stand for something, we're gonna fall for anything. And we need soldiers and we need troops. You know, we need our own army. We need people that's not scared to move and do no anything. We not in a time where we can be cowards. I understand that they can target us and we have to watch maybe what it is that we say, but I think like on the Underground Railroad, we need to be fully prepared. We need to be fully prepared.
Agreed.
Because they ain't playing with us and we can't play with them. And one of the things is like, know your enemy because they know us. We not even trying to be the enemy, but we are. To me, it's worse, you know. It's kind of like living right now, especially during COVID. I felt like we was watching the Martin Luther King, the look at the lynching. I mean, what's different? Black men is driving trucks and getting lynched in certain states. Police officers shooting a lady in the head because she started praying. Just imagine if we turned around and started doing that.
And we already know the answer. And yes, and one of the things that I also think that we do, well, I don't even think I know that we do. And I this is a function, like so we have a body of science where people are dealing with post-traumatic stress and and we have folks talk about post-traumatic slave syndrome so but whatever however we conceptualize the impact of trauma, whatever words that we're using, one of the ways I think it manifests and our need to believe that what white folk that there is a conspiracy in terms of what white folks do. White folks don't need no conspiracy. They just
Definitely.
do what they do.
Proudly and boldly.
Yes. They act in the manner in which they act, and then and then we spend X amount of time. Some of us spend X amount of time. Trying to figure out blah 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 blah. When in reality, there is no secret about the manner in which they move and the implications for those movements for us. And we have to know that, and this is a very important piece to me, that if we're seeing a rise in their overt and intentional behavior, it's in response to something. And so where I differ from a lot of folks is that I believe that we make not just some gains. I think we've made significant gains, particularly given where we've come from in the context of this thing that they call America. And it is because we've made those significant gains that it is necessary for them to aggress in the manner in which they are now. Because if things were moving status quo, then we would be seeing status quo. And so we're seeing a ratcheting up, and we're seeing the front end of, of a oppressive and repressive regime that is going to be more akin to, the 60s, 50s, and 40s than anybody. So I'm 50 years old. This is going to be more harsh than anything that has occurred in the previous 50 years.
Exactly.
And so we need to be ready for that, hence the call for action.
The
Let me say a few things right quick. Now she mentioned, Zakia mentioned, I mean Akasha mentioned that of the enemy. So if you take who the enemy is, which is the oppressive governmental system that we live under, and you take the mentality that they have, and then you have those who go along to get along as far as acquiring that mentality and linking up with them in a certain way. This has to be recognized that if you take on the mentality of your oppressor, what is that doing to you? If I'm looking at it mathematically, somebody is against you, and then you link up with them and their thinking and their ways, their culture, their value system, in which I used to participate in. That's like the bulk of the battle. Once they got your mind, they got you. So I was going to say this is exactly why we do what we do, because you have to get out of that mentality. And once you get out of the mentality, you won't be feeding into their system. And
So
I'm
let me
talking
be
about, oh,
clear.
but no, I'm just was saying I'm not saying anything against what you're saying. I'm saying that that's a part of it, the mentality. That's all. That's just adding to what you're saying.
So,
But
brother, let me philosophize something for you. For me, it's not their mentality. We come from great kings and queens, our
okay,
African ancestry. So for me, I want to clarify something. So for me, I don't
sister,
take on, I'm
check
not
this out.
taking on.
Excuse me, excuse me. Now listen, all I'm saying, that's just a facet. When you're looking at an enemy and you're acting like that enemy, mathematically, you're the enemy of yourself. That's all I'm saying. I'm just making a point, but I'll come back to you. I got to move on to other people at this point. I'm going to come back to you. Brother Hembrick, do you have a question or a comment about the topic?
What's the topic?
The topic is our, this is our call to action in the wake of the destruction and dismantling of the administrative state by this current president and his administration.
I think we need to call to action before they even got in this.
Of course we did.
And it's been my contention that whenever you operate in any of the tenets of your former oppressor, former, current, whatever, you are doing stuff to yourself. I agree with Brother Rocket T on that point. And it is my contention that, we can change this overnight if we get right between our ears about what's actually going on. But we're caught up in so many of the things that we inherited and learned from this devil, I want to say. And that's the thing I agree with Elijah Muhammad. I don't agree with a whole lot that he said, but one thing I believe he says that this blue-eyed devil is the real. I ain't talking about on the ground right here that we're dealing with. And if we just change, like I said, it's my contention, we do not participate in his holidays, in his and all the celebrations, the way we spend our money, and things that we believe about the hereafter and all of that. Like, what did our ancestors believe before we even met any of these people? So I think that's one of the biggest hindrance to our recovery and our fight, is we looking for, those in the sky to solve it for us. I don't want to get any particular religion, but that's still from him, and still from slave owners, and all the three major religions all come from them, and they all enslaved us. Like I said, we disregard any of that. Stop spending our cash with these holidays, and in the churches could be, in the mosques and the temples could be instrumental if they would just switch their program. It's a big money hustle, and folks ain't gonna give up that hustle. But the structure, if it would change, the structure is there. We're just not doing what we need to do with it. For example, we got churches on every corner here and there. But what are they doing in return, in terms of black liberation? All the money we spend on holidays and all that stuff, we can take that cash and build some kind of economy for ourselves. But I'm of the nature, like, I don't suffer from the illusion of inclusion. We can talk about their government and all this and that, and what's going on with all of that, and just step away from it and do for self. We need to be, we always getting involved trying to help other folks, but ain't nobody helping us. And we need to look in the mirror and decide who we're gonna be, and just go from there. It ain't gonna happen overnight, but I'm telling you, brother, as long as that lock is between our is on our brain, and what we think and how we act and what we do, it's gonna be a tough fight. And that's all I gotta say is right now.
And thank you, Brother Mashinda. Like, and what in response to the latter part of your comments, like if we look at if we look at too many black folks, particularly those who are supposed to be representing us in our various places across the country, i.e. the Congressional Black Caucus, and then just even the black talking heads on TV. When we're looking at what's going on in the Ukraine, you can tell that this is black folks seeing this thing through the eyes of white folks, and in this particular case, through the eyes of Joe Biden. We don't have no fight. We don't have nothing to gain from Ukraine. Ukraine's relationship with Russia. But you have black folks siding with Ukraine, not because it makes sense, but because it aligns them with whoever they perceive to be, in power and able to give them power. And in this case, it would be, the Biden administration. And so when they look at what Trump is doing in this situation, they're mad at Trump because it's Trump, not because they understand what is going on in that actual circumstance. And this too, so it's bad when we are aligning with the enemy, period. And so it's bad if we're aligning with Trump, and it's bad if we're aligning with Joe Biden, because they are both white supremacists. Biden just happens to be a Democrat. Now, I do believe that we get more bang for our buck in our relative struggles and negotiations, but ultimately he a white president. He ain't all in for us, and his history will dictate that. But it's just interesting in listening to the conversations and listening to the comments of Black folks who are in those political spaces, either as public servants or as media personalities, that they misread this because of some allegiance to him, as opposed to they're actually looking at this in from the mindset with which they're supposed to be using, and that is a solid understanding of geopolitics. Because really what we're looking at when we look at Russia's response to the Ukraine, this would be the same as the United States' response to Maurice Bishop in Grenada. The United States killed Maurice Bishop because they thought he was bringing communism to their doorstep. Putin told the United States, if you make any efforts to facilitate the Ukraine joining NATO, I'm invading. He told them that, because the whole reason that NATO exists is to suppress Russia. So he would consider that as an act of war. And so the United States moved forward, Putin moved forward. And my whole point in that conversation is we need to have a better understanding of geopolitics so that we have a better understanding of how we can get, other resources, how we can have other alignments that yield whatever they're going to yield for us as we fight whatever battles that we have to fight. Because right now we are relatively isolated as African Americans. We are isolated in this place because we tend to take on the position that that his enemy is our enemy, when in reality, we have to have a better understanding of the geopolitics and the historical actions of these other nation states.
Okay, that has to be considered for us to. You got to have a good understanding, a well-rounded understanding of what's going on, to be able to move and maneuver. That makes sense. Okay, Brother Mashinda. You there, Brother Mashinda? Will you come back to you? Professor Ra, you on mute.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand it correctly. And I want to again thank Dr. Charles for coming on, and the new sister Keisha for being here, and my brother Joe Hembrick, as well as you, Rasha Keys. It's a beautiful thing, and appreciate what's been discussed. But we've had a long history of resistance on the continent. In Hades, and in different venues, there's different forms of resistance. Sometimes people think you're not resisting if you don't resist the way they want you to resist. But people resist their national organization, the National Black United Front. You have the National Black Reparation Coalition. You have many national organizations and movements by Black people all over, and I just think that we sometimes think that because it's not on television, as Gil Scott said, or not on the radio, and we don't hear about it, that we're not resisting. Look, and even recently, with the George Floyd resistance movement. With the Michael Brown resistance movement, and some progress has been made, and then the system cracked back because they're gonna crack back. But I mean, we've had a lot of outstanding leaders that led a resistance movement going all back in that Turner, Frederick Douglass, and his ways. I mean, we wouldn't be where we are. The European didn't grant us freedom. We fought for it. You understand? I mean, And we was up against their court, we was up against their military, we was up against their collaborators that they had co-opted, and we said, so we're still resisting. I mean that, the Holocaust of enslavement was supposed to have been forever. Took us 100 years to get out, but we got out. You understand? And all those efforts. I mean, some people resist by writing. Some people resist by writing narratives about resistance. And some make movies about resistance. Some make sing songs about resistance. And some organize and just demonstrating and do things. The thing is that the formula is education. Education. As we say in Coweta, education, mobilization, organization, and confrontation leads to transformation. I feel good with the brothers and sisters that's out there doing things and trying to do things. There's a cadre of brothers and sisters that are young and have not been taught and not been trained from the home or the household to think politically or to think actively. But you don't need, I mean, sometimes like Haki used to say, there's some people that are lost that need to stay lost. But we got to just keep on pushing because we appear to be like, we can't win and we're not doing nothing. I mean, that's what the system wants you to believe. Do you understand that you ain't doing nothing, that you can't do nothing, that you don't know what you're doing? And they put that type of narrative out there on the media. And then they suppress the most bodacious movements that we've had and organizations that did a lot of good. The first Black Power conference, the Watts Rebellion, the New Jersey Rebellion, the Detroit Rebellion, Chicago Rebellions. I mean, we've stood up and fought back. I understand what Dr. Charles is saying, that we would like to see more, and we would like to educate more, and we would like to go and get people to, like he said, the Two Cradle Theory by Diop. But Diop also had a number of books. He was a French scientist, and he wrote his book. They had to be translated. But at the same time, he wrote African Unity. And then the origin of African civilization, where he talks about how the different ethnic groups were formed and things of this nature. Why Japanese eyes go one way and Chinese eyes go another, monsoon winds and all that type of stuff that turned into mutation. I mean, we got a lot of knowledge out there. But if we're sending our kids to school and think they're going to teach them to be revolutionary or conscious, or activists, no, they're going to teach them to be American. You understand? They did the Native American that way. Cut their hair, made them go to day school, and then had the nerve to have land grabs giving away their land, the Native American, because he has a military. He's just a brute. You understand? But, I mean, the struggle is a continuous struggle. You understand? And you can't just get beat up on us as far as saying that we're not doing anything and we need to do this. And Biden, even when Obama was in there, he wouldn't even pardon Marcus Garvey. He wouldn't even pardon black prisoners that was there for weed and stuff. But the movement made them begin to they began to see that it's to their advantage to release these brothers and sisters after serious struggle, and then we just had a movement the other day. They said, "Don't watch Trump." Reverend Barber and Martin said, "Watch our program." You understand? Not most black people, some many black people watch it because they're programmed. You know what programming is, Dr. Alexander. I mean, they're Americans, you know. They want the same thing Americans want. You understand? But they don't understand how America, how white America got what they have. They didn't pray for it and God gave it to them. They killed people and took it. And so, but it's just a beautiful thing to see. This is Akisha. She's with the Black Panther Revolutionary Party. And it may not catch on. It may catch on. I'm not the. Really, they're supposed to be based in Chicago with Dr. Ali. Is that his name? Rashiki?
Ali, Dr. Ali Muhammad.
Yeah, Ali Muhammad. I don't know if you heard of him, Dr.
Only when Rashiki sent me his information, so now I can reach out.
Okay. And see, that's networking. And I'm just saying that, yeah, there's a lot of, as I conclude, there's a lot of people that want to do it their way or no way. They're the only ones with the answer. But conditions create consciousness. And as long as we are oppressed, there's going to be resistance. That's just it. Some kind of resistance, some kind of way. You know, the people in the Holocaust of slavery, they resisted in different ways. Runaways, setting fires, grinding glass and putting it in the man food so he cut up his stomach. All kind of things that they did while they was in the Holocaust of enslavement. I mean, it's just been a, you know, we look at Sen Q and all those people that turned the boats around and I mean we doing the best we can with what we have for those that do resist. There's a cadre of brothers and sisters that are not in the movement, not conscious. And that's what oppression supposed to do, make them unconscious. You understand? We try to make them conscious, and the system's spending billions of dollars rewarding them or punishing them not to be conscious. You see what I'm saying? And making us want what they got and be like them. And I don't want to be like them personally. You understand? I don't mess with them. Yeah, man, that's a whole different story. But anyway, I just think the presentation is good, Dr. Charles, and just keep up the good work that you're doing. Go ahead, Rashid.
All
Thank
right.
you, Father.
I want to see if Brother Mashinda wanted to chime in. Brother Mashinda? Okay, he's probably just listening. Okay, Akasha, back to you. Akasha?
Can you go
Give
back
me.
to the day and take a picture of me for me and let me
Give
see
me
it?
one second. I'm on the phone with Brother Ali Muhammad. He about to chief. He about to join in one second. He's trying to join, so I'm trying to send a link.
Okay. We get a chance to hear from. But go ahead, Dr. Charles.
And as Baba Rod was just speaking about the education piece, and it's like that's a thing that we really got to gear up for whatever these, how we can act in, given these proposed changes. Okay, so is it the end of the world if they are successful in dismantling the Department of Education and actually moving resources to the states? Is that actually the end of the world? Are we prepared to receive that? Are we prepared to, so the thought would, so the concern has to be, are all the requisite financial resources coming? So if you're going to push, if you're going to close the department, and you're going to move those resources to the state, and the states actually administrate education anyway, are we positioning ourselves to make sure that those monies that are supposed to be coming into our communities are still coming into our communities? And so those are the things, it's those types of things that we have to be very thoughtful about. In this response to the rollbacks of DEI, Bob Rob mentioned our response to the killings of Michael Brown and and George Floyd, and a lot of these things that we saw in terms of this DEI stuff came in response to the reckoning. You know, the weeks and weeks and weeks we were in the streets after the killing of George Floyd. But are we fighting for DEI or are we fighting for black jobs? Because those are two different things, and many of us think they are the same. DEI, 70%, 76%, I believe it is. This is reported by the Department of Labor. 76% of people who hold these DEI positions in the corporate structure and in the public spaces and the university spaces, those are white folks. It's not DEI that's hiring, you know, line staff. And so we have to make sure that our protests are targeted to protect the right people. And that requires probably a little more strategy than what we've probably applied to this initial piece. You know, the other part of it is, are we being thoughtful about how we manage the supply chains of Black vendors? And so that whole movement requires a little more thought and a little more strategy. In terms of what it is our ask is our ask simply that DEI be reinstated, or is our ask that there is still more equity for, you know, like for again, those black wholesalers that are connected to a Walmart, to a Target, you know, to whoever these other retailers are. Are we asking that there's more access to capital for them and more access to the requisite tax breaks and tax incentives and things of that nature? Is that what we're asking for? Or are we literally just fighting for the re-implementation of this global thing we call DEI? So the call for action also speaks to that. Are we centered in our fight? And that merits our attention. You know, a focus on what we are presuming to be, you know, the enemy. Bobby Rye has his hand up.
That's true. First of all, there's a lot of educators say that they should get rid of the Department of Education because it really, really failed us, and that states should run it, and we have a better shot with local politics. And you know, all it is about charter schools. That's why they want to get rid of the Department of Education, and that may start back with the independent black schools. You understand that couldn't function. So that's one. Second, DEI, you know, we've had affirmative action, we've had the DEI, we've had manpower development program, anti-poverty program, and we still in poverty. So none of them projects are working. That's just a game, give you the illusion of, as Joe said, inclusion. And they find ways not to give it to it. Do you understand? I mean, so the struggle is a continuous struggle. This guy, as Elijah Muhammad would say, he's a master of trickeration. You understand? Just like Disneyland. You understand? You get in the line, you pay hundreds of dollars to get in there, stand in the line for 30 minutes to get on a 3-minute ride. That ain't make sense. You understand? The same thing. Magic Mountain. Ain't no mountain magic. You understand? But they got you all twisted in thinking that. And so the struggle is a continuous struggle. And I just want to applaud the people that are still struggling in their own ways with their own methods because of collaborators and infiltrators that have always been a part of our movements and part of the assassinations of our leaders, the discrediting of organizations, the disruption. We used to call them agent provocateurs in the 60s, and they're still there. So the struggle is a continuing struggle. You just got to know how to struggle, when to struggle, and never give up struggling. We may not see it in our lifetime. My parents didn't see the benefits of the civil rights movement. You understand? Or the Black Power movement. You know, my father named me Arthur Montgomery Jr. after him. I changed my name to Amon-Ra. You understand? Because, you know, I got conscious. You understand? I want an African name. You understand? To represent my ethnicity and my culture. I don't know what part of Africa I'm from, but I'll claim it all. That's why we say we're from Africa. Hell, you understand? We're from the whole continent. So it's a beautiful thing, man. When you know who you are, it don't make no difference where you are. And when you know who your enemy is, and you study that enemy, you know how to get around him, and you know how to defeat him. And, you know, Malcolm called for a nonviolent revolution. You understand? And others called for armed struggle. You understand? We had the Black Liberation Army in the 60s and 70s. So, anyway, go ahead, Rasha T.
All right, Tasha.
So I wanted to speak to when you said refer to what I said about being in likeness of the oppressor. I know you probably didn't mean no disrespect, but like Amin-Ra was just saying, he changed his name to say he's from Africa. Some of us was born warriors, some of us was born soldiers, and always been ready or been willing to be on the front line. So to perpetuate such a thing, to say that you in likeness of that of them, I could never be in likeness of them.
Not you, excuse me, sister, not you at all. I'm just was saying that it's people like that. Not you at all. Yeah, no, it wasn't geared towards you. I was just adding to it. That's what I was trying to tell you. I was adding to it.
All
Oh
right.
no, I let people speak, and sometimes I just add to it or I don't. But that's all. No, nothing against you.
Because
So is
we
that it? You had any other comments so we can go to Brother Ali
No,
Muhammad?
that's it. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Brother Ali, Dr. Muhammad.
Hey, good evening, good evening. All power to the people, Black Power, Free the Land. How's everybody doing tonight?
Good evening,
Good
brother.
evening. Good evening, Chief.
Yeah, so I came on a little late. I was actually on government call with the Provisional Government of Republic of New Africa. I'm also the first vice president of the PGRNA and the People's Center Council chairman. So I was actually the general sent me the actual link to this. Initially I wasn't gonna be able to be on the call tonight, but since we were wrapping some things up there, I decided to get on. So I really didn't catch the entirety of what the matter of discussion or topic was, and I didn't want to, I guess, be premature in any type of input that I would have. I did hear some things, though. How would I say? Would anyone be able or willing to just elaborate on me? I mean,
Well,
to break
Dr.
down a little
Charles
bit?
can he could tell you the question that was raised. So go ahead,
Okay.
Dr. Charles.
Yeah, brothers. I mean, essentially, what we're discussing is the, this current situation we find ourselves in with the current administration, and we are 2 months in to a 4-year presidency, and so the call to action is for us to be more aware and aware from not just perspective of that things are happening, but specifically how the things that are happening impact us, at ground level, how these things impact us wherever we are. And so just So I was making some responses to Barbara Rye, and he further elaborated in terms on the educational space, in that, so if they close the Department of Education, for example, are we going to be mad just because Trump closed it, or are we going to look at the implications for that? If they push those resources to the states, then whatever state we live in, we need to be prepared to receive those resources and to make sure that our kids are getting what our kids need, because in theory, we have more power to do so, even more power than how the thing is set up to occur anyway, because education is a state issue. But many of us, we don't understand it as such. And so I can't be confident that we're prepared to fight in that space in an appropriate way, because we don't see, we don't understand that there could be a benefit to us by those resources in mass coming directly to the state. We have to be ready to respond to that. Similarly, as people are responding to DEI and this DEI rollback, are we fighting for DEI or are we fighting for black jobs? Because those are two different things. And so in the midst of this, if we're not aware of actually what's going on, then it's simply reactionary and it's misguided. And so we're fighting to keep DEI positions when 71% of DEI positions are actually held by white folks who aren't necessarily doing shit for us or doing stuff for us, excuse me. So we have to be thoughtful, and that's the call. So the call for action is about us not just, not just mobilizing forces, but mobilizing, but educating and immobilizing and educated and an aware force. So that's kind of the bend of the presentation.
Indeed, indeed. So let me be clear on what I'm understanding. So the gist of it is the fact of us being aware, knowledgeable of ed or educated on what's going on and how to deal with it. Is that exactly what
That's essentially what it is, right? And
okay.
not simply respond, not simply reacting, right?
Got it.
But
Got it.
strategically responding to the threat.
Okay, I
Right.
get it, I get it, I get it. So, if I'm able to now, I definitely would like to speak. And
Yes. Yes.
okay, very good. So here's the thing, it is 100% right that we must definitely, emphatically, be aware and knowledge and have the knowledge and be educated on what's going on. The first thing
Right.
about it is that we all know that there's a war waged against us. It's been that way. It's been heightened and exacerbated in many ways throughout our sojourn here in this part of the world, since the days that our ancestors came to these shores in shackles and chains and going through the seasoning camps and the various processes after the Civil War, after the so-called Emancipation Proclamation, Radical Reconstruction, and then following that with Jim Crow and going through so many different phases and stages that we've gone through. There's always been a war. It's been on many different levels. And every attempt that we've made to understand it and to be aware of what's going on and come up with solutions, we have been knocked down, but like that old saying goes in the religious community, we fall, we fall down, paraphrasing it, but we stand up, but it has been that, we thought we had some leeway with Sherman's Field Order, where they gave us, did give us 40 acres and a mule. We was on that for the lands for about a year and 6 months. And after they assassinated Lincoln, they start taking it back and start giving it to our former so-called owners and started to send invitations to, Europeans to come over. And they came over as so-called peasants, but got all these different grants and stuff that came from what belonged to us. They gave them land and land grants, et cetera, et cetera. Dr. King spoke of it. I'm moving right along and not to digress. So we reached the pinnacle. Most people don't, who just hear of the romanticized history of Dr. King. A lot of his fight had to do with just that, dealing with everything that I just heard you say about jobs and all. A lot of his fight had to do with that. He went throughout the country. People don't know how much of a revolutionary he was because we got into this debate between him and Baba Malcolm and Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Baba Mwali, may he rest in peace and rest in power. May both of them rest in peace and rest in power. And the issue was, whether we're going to sit there like we begging and kneeling down and sitting in, to the oppressor, or we're going to stand up and fight. That was a debate that I feel, in my opinion, should not have been a debate. It should have been some unity in the context, but both were strategizing ideology. Most people don't know that what Dr. King did was one of the most revolutionary things you can do if you behind enemy lines besides firing shots, meaning that passive resistance is a form of guerrilla warfare. It helps to put forth a war of attrition, which drains the enemy's resources. And Dr. King did a lot of that. He shut down cities and towns, because they didn't have enough jails, and all that interruption of their businesses by sitting in, and people didn't want the tourists didn't want them coming. People didn't want to support those businesses anymore. So Johnson was compelled to sit down and to pass the civil rights, initiatives and the voter right initiatives and even the housing initiatives that came later and even job initiatives, the war on poverty and everything. That was all inspired by Dr. King to bring in these different jobs and different resources. He was compelled to do it. And when he did it, he said, I think we just lost. Not that we're trying to pick a side, Democrat or Republican, as a people, but I'm saying what he said. He said, I think we just lost the Democratic Party to the Republicans and to the South. He said, after he did these initiatives with Dr. King, long story short, the initiatives that Dr. King stood on and that was passed, it did help us. We did, get some housing. We did get some different levels of employment. We did benefit in many ways from those things. It wasn't full benefit. We're still talking about some type of capitulation and assimilation into the system, but we did get some leeway. And they constantly fought against that. Nixon came up with the Southern Strategy to knock all of that down. Lee Atwater in 1981, when he was speaking about how the Republican Party can be racist without saying they're racist, using quote unquote the Southern Strategy, he broke down with that man. He said, in 1950s when you said the N-word, he said, you've gotten problems in the 60s with that. We can't say that no more. We got to say the problem is housing, taxes, buses, immigrants, anything but that. But all of it is just a euphemism or dysphemism, paraphrasing him, or a dog whistle for black people. He said, because the end result is black people suffer the hardest. Like Johnson said, BJ said that, paraphrasing him, that the white supremacist or the southern white man will be okay with you robbing his pockets or him being, losing or being injured or hurt as long as black people are hurt the worst. He did say the lowest white man and the highest black man, but I'm just paraphrasing what he's saying. My point of saying that is this: understanding what we're up against, and as you were stating, and knowing. So what are we up against? What is this right now? So we're up against what they call MAGA, right? Make America Great Again. What does that even mean? It means more than we think. Real quickly, not to be long-winded, but just to try to summarize the definition of what they're saying. In 2015, there was a poll done by the Public Religious Research Institute. It was in November 2015, and it was entitled "Nostalgia." Sorry, nostalgia, nostalgia, mistrust, and anxiety. And it was a survey on American values, and they wanted to know how white America felt at that time. Now, I wasn't a supporter of Barack Obama. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney was running at the time that he was running for president, and I supported her. Not only did I support her, I followed her throughout the country to be like a black secret service with the Revolutionary Black Panther Party because the Green Party didn't give her one. But I'm just saying they considered Barack Obama's presidency as like a new reconstruction. So they said they felt like it was some so-called reverse racism. Black people had it better than them, and they wanted America to return to the great old days, good old America. They said great America. And they said that meant when we were in segregation and even all the way to the Confederacy. So this was in their survey. So we knew about the Tea Party. We knew the Tea Party transitioned into the alt-right. And so ultimately, MAGA came out of that dynamic. It said 43% of white America felt they needed great America again. So my point is this. What is that? Because before we talk about all of this stuff, DEI, where the money going for education, we got to know what it is we up against. You got to know the politics that's handling it, right? So what's the politics we're up against? MAGA is what? Trump called it a or shared it as the United Reich, they said, Unified Reich. Well, what was that? Hitler had the Third Reich. What does that mean? Unified Reich. But what is it? Is this? You have all of the rabid races, street soldier, white supremacists, the Ku Klux Klan, the various levels of white nationalism, the patriotic left, the conspiracy theorists like with QAnon, and QAnon, I mean, and the religious right, and all of that united with those in so-called law enforcement, the Back the Blue, the Blue Lives Matter crew, and all the other ones. They're talking right now about trying to release Derek Chauvin, who killed. Who killed our brother George Floyd, but not to digress and keep going. So they got that. Then you got the executive branch, the legislative branch, and judicial branch of government, all MAGA, and then the courts. Lastly, one segment that always had a holdout, because sometimes we had those unified in history, is the bourgeoisie, the ruling class. So now you got them all united because you got Elon Musk, the so-called richest man in the world, as MAGA's money man. And what is their plan? I want everybody, if they don't know already, to research Justin Yarvin. Justin Yarvin is the political father of J.D. Vance and Elon Musk. And his strategy is that there must be a techno-authoritarian society. He says that governments and democracies have failed and that technology must take over, and it must be like pockets of technological authoritarianism that you have to do what he called RAGE, which is the retirement of all government employees. So that's what DOGE is. It's the destruction of government. And they said to tear it down and to do their own thing. You got to look at his writing. It's called The Butterfly Effect. He wrote this in 2022, and he stated what a second Trump presidency would look like. Just look it up, Butterfly Effect. He said the second Trump presidency, how it had to be, that you had to have this one person that was the chairman, that was a dictator, and that Trump, and he used, this is Trump he's talking about. He wrote Trump's name. He said that Trump will be the president, but as a decorative, not really in control, but just like the decoration, like some sort of king. But the real ruler would be that person who would destroy everything and tear it all down. And so if you kind of look at what they're doing, they don't care nothing about education, or they want everything to be destroyed. That's kind of what they're on. And it's not a game and not a joke, because they're trying it. They just want to tear everything down and put their own thing into fruition. The problem is that it's a bourgeoisie oligarchy kind of dynamic, which means that they care nothing except about their own selves and their own power, while at the same time, they are racist. And so the poor whites and the MAGA base who really don't understand and get a grasp of this, they lose because of the fact of the initiatives that they're doing targets them. We know that the red states are the public welfare and the public assistance majority. They get the majority of the EBT SNAP, the majority of the Medicaid, and Medicare goes to those states. So they're suffering now because of all the different things that have happened, and even those who got fired was a lot of his base supporters too, that was in the so-called working class. And not to be long-winded and get off topic, but my point is that understanding it on that level and that dynamic take it to another place, because they've rolled the clocks back to the 50s and to the 60s. They're not playing. And so when they throw DEI, helps, this is the point, and where we got to look at the broader basis of things. The only reason why whites and other people can be the majority in some of the social programs that they have, because when you look at it, most of our condition is not just a race thing. It's a people thing, right? Meaning it's a race thing because they're racist against us, but poverty is a people thing. So, of course, whites are going to gain more, and women are going to gain more, and immigrants are going to gain more. Whoever the majority is going to gain more because of the fact it's a people thing. So, unemployment is a people thing, poverty is a people thing. And if the white people, if white people are the social majority, of course, white women and other whites and other people will gain more. That don't mean we're not valuing. It just means the fact that it's a people thing. Poverty is a people thing. Unemployment is a people thing. It just becomes worse for us because we deal with two facets. This happened after slavery, it was just racism. After slavery, our issue became a workers' issue and a racial issue. So we had two fights, black identity fight and a workers' fight. And so a proletariat struggle, right? So the point is that that's the only dynamic of it. DEI did help us, but when the base start
attacking it, they forgot it meant veterans, it meant disabled people, it meant women, it didn't just mean black people. So you attack something that's going to harm your grandma, your uncle, your cousin, and your auntie. And that always happens with them, that they let racism and fascism distract them when the bourgeoisie don't care about nobody except the bourgeoisie, meaning that they attack poor whites, they attack black people, they attack all of us. That's what our power to the people is, us being together, the press and being in power. And of course, black nationalism and pan-Africanism takes a different place. But in closing out what I'm saying, the point is that when we fully understand what that is, that it's a destruction thing, that they're destroying the entire government. They don't care about nothing. They have an agenda and initiative. And a part of the appeasing to the rabid races is we always knew the plot has always been to target us, exterminate us, to round us up. If we were talking about birthright citizenship, we know that came from the 14th Amendment, which, you know, during Dred Scott, they said we were property. The 14th Amendment said now we have birthright citizenship. And it's always been a theme among white supremacists when they used to argue with us, just like, go the F back to Africa, go to F. They never identified us as being a people from here. So all these little tricks they throw out there is always like at the end of it, like the Southern strategy to target us. So you eliminate the 14th Amendment, even though now the court said that, you know, they dancing around and saying that ain't going to be the thing, but you do that. And he says that if you have two or three felonies, he made the statement that, you know, they're going to send you to Guantanamo Bay and other places. You got to look at the dog whistling what he's saying. You know, unfortunately, one in every three black male has been either incarcerated or some type of issue regarding jail or imprisonment. It could be house arrest. But my point is that a lot of that is felony based, and a lot of that is nonviolent felony based, like with the new Jim Crow. So with all of these things that are saying, they've always targeted us. And anything that we do outside of understanding that part of it is just our attempt to assimilate. And you can't assimilate into something that is a part of your destruction. Self-determination, a nation of our own, self-sufficiency is key. And we have to always maintain that focus, because once we try to assimilate into something that's always been against us, we will lose. But knowing is key. So as I was stating, we got to know what the heck this is. MAGA is not a game, and it's not a joke, and it's nothing to play with. And once we understand it, now we can think and collectively come together on what we got to do about it. And I yield on that, but that's just what I would like to, I guess, share and express what the topic is. Black power, power to the people and freedom.
Thanks for that. That was excellent commentary. Dr. Charles?
And I mean, and we can literally end on that, because again, that is the whole point of it, and that is to be right-minded as we are responding to this thing that we are experiencing, and that, you know, in short, that response cannot be reactionary. We have to understand kind of fundamentally how we got here, where we are, and what's in our best interest as we move forward, and be able to differentiate and distinguish between, you know, towing the party line versus doing what is strategically in the best interest of the most people. That's it.
Okay, I appreciate it. Appreciate everybody's participation. It was an excellent show, as usual. I think all of our shows are good. But next week, well, tomorrow, let me show everybody what we're doing tomorrow. We have a special edition show, and we're going to talk about reflections of Neely Fuller Jr. You got Mr. Bobby, the co-host of the Counter Racist show, with Neely Fuller Jr. up until his passing. And then we got Brother Mukko was the guest last week when we were talking about Neely Fuller Jr. So we're continuing, you know, honoring him. And then next week on Tuesday, the guest is actually here. And that's Dr. Ali Muhammad. Dr. Muhammad, have you came up with the title of the topic yet, or are you still working on it?
I'll send it to you tonight, but it will be something along the lines of it was going to be solutions to our current struggle. It was going to be something almost similar to what y'all were dealing with tonight, but I'll come up with the I was wrestling over the title, throughout the day, and I have it for you this evening.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And Professor Ra is the host. Professor
Very
Amin Ra is here. He's the host.
nice to meet you, Brother Ra, Professor Ra.
You're okay.
Nice to meet you. You have you heard of a brother named Kwamanon in Chicago?
Repeat his name again.
We call Go ahead, Rashiki.
Kwabena. Kwabena is a
No, of course not.
Geronimo Pratt's nephew.
Last name Pratt, Kwabena Pratt.
Can you spell his name? Because I actually have met a relative of Baba, Geronimo Pratt. I actually met him from the
He's
airport
from,
on a ride
yeah,
ship, but
he's
I'm not
actually
sure.
from Gary. He lives in Gary, but he
Okay,
does.
thank you. Okay, Indiana. Okay.
And he does a lot of work, and so he does a lot of work on both sides. So he's in Chicago a lot, and but
If
typically.
y'all could connect me with him, that'd be good. But like I said, I have met a relative, but I don't recall that particular name, though.
Okay, we can make it happen.
Dr.
Indeed.
Muhammad, can you
Yes.
tell the Brother Amin Ra what we're doing on the 25th, the two
Okay.
evening?
Yeah. On the 25th, so I'll be in Oakland, the 25th and the 26th. We'll be co I'll be covering a actual lecture entitled "The Role of the Revolutionary in Bourgeoisie Oppression: Combating the Oligarchy." That would be the gist of the title, and it'd just be dealing with what the solution is. And there's a lot of time we have, venting and arguments, but there must be solutions to our problems. So it's going to be the role of the revolutionary, combating bourgeoisie oppression and the oligarchy. At least that's a paraphrase of the title. But that's what it's going to be about. On March the 25th at the college there, at Merritt College.
Okay. Right. So we're gonna close down, and I want everybody to continue the rest of their day as a positive force that we continue to have gathering as we do. And well, I'm just gonna end with Conscious Corner, and each one teach one. We're gonna take our pause.